We all have things to do, I guess. So I'd like to call this meeting of the Active Transportation Committee to order for Wednesday, October 10th. And the time is about, by my watch, 8:53. How's that? Anyway, I'd like to welcome everybody here, and maybe we should do some introductions around the table and start over here.
I'm Joe Taylor. I'm an Active Transportation Planner at UTA.
Brett Active, Utah Department of Public.
Katie Jordan, Wasatch Front Staff.
Dirk Burton, West Jordan City Council, and a bicycle rider.
Heidi Goodhart, UDOT Planning, Active Transportation.
Good morning, I'm Ben Adolsky with the Ogden City Council, filling in for our standing member, Rich Iyer, represents the Weber Area Council Governance.
Welcome.
Joe Schoblum, Mayor, South Weber City.
Good morning, Ted Knowlton, on the staff here at Wasatch Front Regional Council. Andrew Gruber, our Executive Director, apologizes that he can't be here. He's on a plane back from Chicago.
My name is Hugh Van Wagenen. I just recently started with Wasatch Front as the new Active Transportation Planner. It's a real pleasure to be here. Thanks.
I'm Jeff Silvestrini, Mayor of Mill Creek.
Joy Donner, Wasatch Front Regional Council.
Tim Riley, Mayor of West Jordan.
Phil Sarnoff, Quake, Utah.
Helen Peters, Transportation Program Manager, Salt Lake County.
Barry Burton, Davis County.
Jeff Euler, Davis County.
Anders Bay, Governor and Chairman.
Let's go back here then.
Kim Cousin, Georgia Mayor.
Julia Moore.
Frank Colby of Rockner.
Sean Amicum with MAG.
Matt Seyfold, UDOT.
Jeff Harris, UDOT Planning.
Bill Summer from Salt Lake County.
Catherine Kelsey, Salt Lake County Health Department.
Kim Myhill, City.
Mark Bradley, Redwood City.
Hollywood Federal Highway.
Bowen Stanger, Federal Highway.
Steve Cawthorne.
Ned Hacker, WFRC.
Roger Gordon, Utah, for better transportation.
Sarah Hudson, Air.
Dave Foster, operating in the site.
Vice President, AECOM.
Over here.
Louise Davenport, Wasatch Front Regional Council.
Scott Hess with WFRC.
Bert Granberg, Analytics Group, here at WFRC.
Okay, thank you, everybody. So I guess, and we have some people on the phone.
Yeah, so Travis Olson from Weber Morgan Health Department.
Harry Bennett, Utah County Health Department with Julianne Titmus as well.
Okay, thank you. All right, so our first action item is approval of our minutes from the last meeting of August 8th. Are there any comments or corrections? Somebody want to make a motion?
Move to approve.
Second.
Mayor Ryan.
All right, we have a motion and a second. We get, all right, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The minutes are approved. Thank you. Is there anyone like to address the committee in public comment?
Good morning, everybody. My name is Elliot, and I know some of you, but not all of you. I'm a bicycle rider. I volunteer to organize a lot of events, including bike rides, all over Utah. When this committee first met with Commissioner Downs, I stood up and I said, we have a problem with GO-DAS, and we still do. I'd like to paint a weird picture for you. In our streets, there are utility plates, covers. They're about this wide in diameter. Sometimes they see sewer, sometimes they see water, sometimes they don't see anything. Let's pretend for a moment that we pull all those out of the road. Now, you're going to be driving from here to wherever you're going. These plates are going to be missing. You're going to have issues. That's the situation that bicyclists face on our pathways and our roads with GO-DAS thorns. You can't see them until you run over them. Then you have a problem. I urge all of you to consider that as a problem that we have as a cyclist. We're planning on pathways and roadways, but we're not putting in a maintenance component to address the GO-DAS issue. These little rascals, they'll live forever. I've been on several poles with the Jordan River Commission, and the only way I know to do it is to dig them up with a dandelion puller and bag them. And you have to do it over and over and over again, because they live for like 5 years in a freeze proof. Consider having a bounty on GO-DAS. On all of your active transportation budgets, and I know you all have them, let's put in $10,000 to GO-DAS. as a bounty, and then give people $10 a bag or $5 for half a bag. And it doesn't matter where the goat has come from, to come from Provo or Ogden, Grantsville. Someone comes in with a bag of goat heads, let's redeem them. Let's incentivize the problem we have with goat head remediation, as a suggestion this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anybody else? Okay, thanks. Move on to the chair's report now. So first I'd like to turn some time over to Hugh Van Wagenen, and I just want to say that I was pleased to participate in the interviews for staff for the Ag Transportation Committee and planner. And we had a number of really qualified applicants, actually from all over the country, and what do I want? So,
yay.
Yeah, so why don't you tell us a little bit about your background and
thank you, Mayor.
Recreate your interview.
That's right. Many more people. I recently came from Linden City, where I was the planning director there for 6 years, down in Utah County, but got to work a lot with Shauna and Mag, Jim Price down there, and their technical advisory committees. I've grown up in Utah, primarily did live in Florida for a little while, then lived with a squad in Virginia, have a couple of degrees from BYU, became passionate about cycling as a mode of transportation when I did a tour of California along the coast from basically the northern border and down to San Diego with a couple of friends, and that was sort of my eye-opening experience to riding a bike, which was brilliant. Real believer that the active transportation is a critical component of our future here, not just for people that choose to do it, but because people have to do it, and it's a big part of our health moving forward as well, and just livable communities. So I'm really, really excited to be here with Wasatch Front and to work with all of you. It's a big new area for me. I have a ton to learn, but really looking forward to it and to lean on all of you. But also hope that you'll feel free to reach out to me at any time and lean on me with whatever help or resources I can provide and the team here at Wasatch Front. So thank you.
Thank you. Okay, the other thing I want to just mention as chair's report is I also was able to go on the MAP tour to Boise with a few people here, Phil and Jory, and I don't know who else is here that is on that tour, but there are a number of us that spent 2 days riding around Boise. I actually got to spend 3 days riding around Boise, so I went up there a day early. They are doing some great things up there. They're, I would say, ahead of us in some respects with respect to bicycle infrastructure, and they're lagging behind us in some respects with respect to that, and also with their other transportation. They don't have light rail. Their bus service, I think, is not as robust as we have here with ETA. And so they are working on that, trying to integrate that. But the big asset that they have there is a trail on basically both sides of the Boise River, called the Boise Greenbelt, and it's a developed trail. It's been there actually for a long time. I remember when my daughters played soccer at tournaments up in Boise. I used to sneak out from my chaperone duties and ride that trail. maybe I don't know, 15 years ago. It's much more mature now, and one of the things that really impressed me is how they've used it as an economic development tool. So the Boise River, probably has a little more flow in it than the Jordan River. I was kind of trying to evaluate that, and it's tough to tell, really, because, the Jordan River, we've dredged it, we've allowed invasive species to grow up along it, so it's full of tamarisk and goat heads, and so it's really not the same kind of an experience as they have in Boise, which is more of like what you would expect is like a big mountain stream that has, some riffles in it where people are, kayak or tube, and the water at least looks a lot cleaner. We have a ways to go to do that, but it gave me the idea about what kind of an amenity that could be in Salt Lake County, and probably, specifically Salt Lake County, I guess, but, if we could, through the Jordan River Commission or otherwise, get rid of some of those invasive species, make the Jordan River clear of junk, and more of a amenity for even for boating, for canoeing and whatnot. I know that there's been some work, Mayor McAdams has run a number of rides to try to get people onto the Jordan River, but anyway, there's a great deal of potential there for us. What we saw in Boise, though, is along this trail, you know, there are aspects of that that are not unlike Salt Lake, where that trail goes through kind of semi-industrial urban areas, and other places it's going through, you know, kind of like more open country or, you know, natural areas. We have both of those along the Jordan River. You know, through South Salt Lake, I know there's kind of industrial area. But what they've done there is they've basically located businesses along there, like restaurants, bars, that have, you know, they have a front door onto a street, you know, so they get, you know, car traffic, and the back door is a patio right on that trail, right on the river. And so, you know, that kind of thing really draws people into it, the traffic along that trail. I was there on a Friday evening, you know, Saturday, Sunday, there were tons of people on that trail. It was obvious that Boise has a lot more ridership and, you know, all around through town. I think we can see that in Salt Lake, you know, especially given that we're building more housing and stuff and more density. People are going to be riding bikes. Anyway, I was impressed by what they've done there. They also, through the city, they've copied the Third South Bikeway along Capitol Avenue. They're building a protected bike lane, not unlike on Third South. And then they have other bike lanes along streets there that you know, make it easy to get around on a bike. They have an advantage in Boise in that it's a pretty flat place. You know, we have a little more hills, but you know, e-bikes are going to solve all that for us, right? Mm-hmm. Except for Dirk, he won't need one of those. Anyway, I don't know if others that joined the tour had anything to add. The other thing I do want to say that came out of this is that I had the opportunity to conspire with some of the other cities in the central part of Salt Lake Valley, particularly Mayor Camp from Murray and Planner from Midvale, and we conspired basically to combine on a grant application for a TLC grant to do an active transportation plan. And right now I've got Taylorsville, Mill Creek, Midvale, Murray, Holiday, and Cottonwood Heights signed up to participate in applying for a grant like that. So how could we not get that grant if we're all together like that, doing the kind of thing that this organization promotes, which is some regional planning and cooperation among municipalities? So anyway, I encourage people to look into that as well. It was an exciting thing, and I'm glad I won. Joy or Phil, anybody have anything to add?
I was just going to add the flexibility of their green bikes. They have a different system that they're not all docked, similar to, they're called social bikes. So that was nice to have that flexibility to lock your bike up wherever you wanted. If you're not at a station, they charge you a couple bucks, the convenience kind of fee, but that was interesting. So I know that the bike shirt here is looking at different systems and flexibilities. You either have the consistency of knowing something's at a station, or you have the flexibility at the end of your ride. So striking that balance, I think, was good. And then, as you said, it was nice to see the communities that from the central part of Salt Lake County discussing providing that application. I know last year, West Jordan and South Jordan went in on an application, and that was awarded. West Valley has an active transportation plan coming up this next year. The southern part of Weber County with South Ogden and Riverdale, that area. Ogden City just completed their master plan a couple years ago. So they're picking up steam, and a lot of effort from Bike Utah on helping coordinate some of those efforts. And we'll see if there's much competition for your application this coming go around. They're due at the end of this month. So if there are other communities that are interested, get with us, get with you, or the TLC group on setting in that application.
I think you two nailed it. So.
Other potential things, right, is we like to do a one a year out of state. So we've been toying around with some ideas, but if anybody's interested or knows a good location, we've been to Boulder, Fort Collins in the past. We've been to Minneapolis, you know, so we're trying to hit the similar climates, similar terrain as here. Not heading out to San Diego or something where it's sunny all the time and nice. So give us some ideas, and we'll see if we host a couple local mobile active transportation tours next year. A lot of that work comes from the local community. So if there are cities or if there's areas in the locally that we can get bigger groups or more people, we'll be coordinating potentially on those too. I know Jeff's pulled that together for South Davis. back at the Salt Lake City. There's been up in Ogden, so we'll see where those go next year, too.
All right, thanks. So let's move on then to an update on Wasatch Choice 2050 vision. The 2019-2050 Regional Transportation Plan consists of roadway transit and active transportation projects. And Hugh's going to talk to us, give us an overview about this.
Thank you very much. I'm glad that Jory and Scott are here because they've been through a lot of this process already. The slide that you see up here right now, so where we're at with the RTP, the Regional Transportation Plan, when it comes to active transportation as the mode, gone through a needs-based process where we've gone out to all the cities and stakeholders, said what are the needs, where are we at, where do facilities need to go. Obviously this is an update of the current Regional Transportation Plan. Beyond that, and beyond just recognizing where the needs are, now we're trying to phase those needs and trying to say, just like with transit and with roadways, right, phase one, right, would be 2019 to 2030, or excuse me, 2030, I had it right first time, 2030 and then 2031 to 2040 for phase two, and then 2041 to 2050 for phase three. Trying to bring some parity between the modes as far as identifying when these facilities could be funded and going in. Way we've done that is by taking some of the goals from the Wasatch Choice 2050 program and plan and process that you've all been participating in and saying, okay, based on these goals, how can we then apply some criteria to recognize what facilities go in what phase? And so not all 10 goals were used when it came to active transportation, but Anders, if you can scroll down. First one, livable and healthy communities, safe and friendly streets, housing choices, how does it relate to traffic conditions, and then quality transportation choices, all had a scoring criteria that fed into the spreadsheet, which then kicked out phases for each of the facilities. On top of that, after that process was done, Anders, if you can go to the map one, should just be the second, perfect. So phase one, phase two, phase three, all of these got kicked out. Another thing we've tried to do, rather than just identify where the facility is going, is what type of facility it is. And you can see a little graphic. Anders, can you maybe scroll into the little protection levels there on one of the sides? Just zoom in if you have a second. Trying to say not only where's the facility, but what type of facility. What is the comfort level there for any given rider? Again, trying to capture the 60% of folks that are interested in riding, but not necessarily comfortable at the moment. And as we produced this map, then went out to all the technical advisory committees and got input from the different cities and planners and stakeholders there, and tried to refine that with UDOT and UTA as well. Pressure's on, man, pressure's on. Got it, thank you. So right now, where we're at in this process, after getting feedback from local staff members and local stakeholders.
These are the bars at the bottom to go right in there. Go to that one box you were on. The white box. Right there.
Boom, right there.
That's a little over. There you go.
And our maps now are a little bit different, actually, in our current iteration. We actually have a protection level 4, which is a multi-use off-grid pathway. But next steps for us here, as we identify the phasing, is to take it out to more small area meetings, and all of you will be getting a phone call about those meetings that are coming up here at the end of October through the end of November, where we can really hone in and say, hey, this is an opportunity for last comments before we really try and publish the RTP in May. One of the differences between transit roadways and active transportation are the funding sources. So roadways and active transportation are going to be fiscally constrained, and so we have the needs-based phasing, phase one, phase two, phase three. Okay, now we only have so much money in phase one, phase two, phase three. How do we shift things around to meet that funding, those funding levels? Jory and Scott have done some good work on trying to identify active transportation funding. It's a little bit murkier than roadways and transit, however. And so we're doing our best to refine that as much as possible. Bottom line is you'll see it as we go to these local area meetings, right? There's more need than there is funding for active transportation. That's a really, really, really brief overview. Again, these local area meetings will be, I think, the fourth meeting throughout the RTP phase that we've done with local areas, but hoping to adopt again in May and getting it very close. So please watch your inboxes for invitations to local area meetings. We'll be making phone calls as well, really trying to get everybody out and get your participation in this last round of meetings as we head to final drafts. So anything to add, Jory or Scott?
A couple of things I would add would be, the ultimate goal of having the regional bike network is to have one kind of regional plan that we all use, right? And so we've had a pretty extensive effort working with both UDOT Region 1 and Region 2 for our plan. We went out to our local technical advisory committees at each of the counties. And then this workshop is our opportunity to get local community input on this. And so at the end, hopefully, we'll have a map that everybody can review and know kind of what are our three priorities and phasing. That shouldn't preclude anybody from applying if there are opportunities to do projects later in the phase. And there's one layer below this, right? So all these projects and the bike routes on this plan aren't necessarily all the projects you would have in your local community plan. And so there's another layer, because these are the regional facilities. And then we'll have an opportunity to amend this plan, similar to what we do on the road or the transit projects throughout the next 4 years after we approve this. Because as West Jordan and South Jordan, you guys do your new regional plan, you'll include Region 2, you'll get your local community input, and then we'll be able to come and plug that into this after you're done. And so we'll amend it similar to we do, you know, with our other modes. Those are kind of some of the things I would add.
Thank you. Okay. Was there any?
We had somebody join us.
Well, I can
go ahead.
I wonder, Jim, if you want to also give us an update on what's happening at Mountainland on AT.
All right. Say anything specific? We are in essentially the same. We're very parallel with where you are with where WFRC is right now. We're finished up our local meetings with all of our cities. We're building our plan off of the kind of from the ground level, because we've had the opportunity over the last 10 years to get most of our cities to adopt a comprehensive active transportation plan. And the reason we did that is we wanted something to build from. We had a plan that was more top down from the region down to them. We wanted to switch that around and bring it back up. And so we're taking from that our priority list. What Shauna and I just did earlier this week is we went through and looked at all of our phase one highway projects and determined which of those needed active transportation facilities and what type of facility goes on that. So the assumption is that when a highway project goes in that needs a highway or an active transportation facility, it's funded as part of that project. And so we don't include that in our funding assumptions for active transportation. Our funding assumptions are that we have gone out to the cities and we've asked them what their priorities are over the next 10 years. We take those and pare those down to what makes the most sense region-wide. And then we apply what we think we can fund over that 10-year time frame based on past history. So it's kind of a voluntary, fiscally constrained plan. We did this for the first time 4 years ago. It seemed to work pretty well. And we're carrying that forward this time.
Thanks, Jim.
One other thing I guess I would add is these will all be put on an interactive map. So that'll be released next week. We have a formal public comment period from October 22nd till November 30th on all modes, but you'll be able to click on the bike project, pull up to's and froms, the estimated costs, and things like that, along with the road and transit portion. So I encourage everybody to go to our website here in a couple weeks and provide comments if you didn't get an invitation to any of the workshop meetings. We're taking comments from everybody. So.
Okay, any questions or comments? Okay, Thanks. So I know this is going to dishearten everybody here, but this is the last meeting of the HEC for this year, and so I don't know. So we have to look forward to next year at this point, and part of that is actually looking at reviewing our goals and trying to fit the role of this committee into that. This committee is created basically to be a forum for regional collaboration between local governments and agencies and other stakeholders on active transportation issues. We're supposed to advise the Regional Growth Committee with respect to long-range planning and growth issues on active transportation, and also we're supposed to advise the Transcom on short-range programming issues related to active transportation. So we have set goals previously that are identified there about updating shared regional priority bicycle routes, encouraging cities and counties to adopt local active transportation plans, try to obtain funding and construct priority projects and building support for active transportation. So the question really is, and I'd like to have an open discussion on this, are these goals adequate, or are there other things that we should be looking toward or focusing on? These are really broad and maybe easy to just say, oh yeah, that's great, but does anybody have any ideas about this? Are there areas where that we need to focus on or that we should add to this list?
Mayor, for the folks on the phone, maybe I can read these. Is that okay?
Sure.
So if you can hear me over the phone there, goal number one, these have been in place since 2017, update shared regional priority bicycle routes and plans. Number two, cities and counties adopt local active transportation plans. Number three, fund and construct priority projects. Number four, build support for active transportation through effective engagement and outreach.
So I think we've had a little bit of discussion about this previously, but we're kind of facing the influx of disruptive technologies with respect to scooters and we haven't got e-bikes yet from Green Bike or not Green Bike but Lime, but that could be coming too. I wonder if we need to, if this is adequate to counter the fact that we should coordinate on addressing shared mobility options, because I think that's actually something that all of us are going to be facing immediately that we should focus on for 2019. We are trying to form a committee to address those issues. I think we have a meeting set. I don't remember when that is.
We're still working on a definitive time. It's been tricky getting everybody scheduled, yeah, but we'll do it here shortly.
But anyway, Salt Lake City's taking the lead on this, come up with a draft operating agreement that they shared with us, but I think at the Salt Lake County Conference of Mayors, we talked about this and recognized the need for local municipalities to coordinate with respect to both how we structure the rules for these companies coming into our jurisdictions, and also trying to come up with a more uniform set of rules with respect to operation of the actual vehicles by our residents, so that people understand those rules from jurisdiction to jurisdiction, know whether they can ride on the sidewalk, know whether they can't. There are some issues about possibly having to modify state law, because state law actually says that you can't ride some of these devices on certain streets that have high speed limits. What do we do with that? Where do these vehicles go on those highways? Do they go on the sidewalk? That's something that I think could be added, is just coordinate. I don't know, shared mobility regulations. Maybe that's a specific thing, but something that I see that's not really covered in any of those.
So this is Travis from Weber Morgan. I really liked that idea. Another thought that I had was working together for funding opportunities to fund projects that are identified in the active transportation plans as we move forward from not just adopting plans, but actually implementing them. And as we work together, I think as different agencies, we come together, then we're not competing for grants, and we're able to I guess, apply for grants that the other organizations may not be able to due to restrictions.
Okay. Anybody have any thoughts on those two ideas?
Yeah, I think the goal number three, fund infrastructure priority projects, that's not something this group does, but can encourage collaboration to fund and construct priority projects. That might be a better way to say that, because there are many places that fund, and it's also collaboratively helps bring the money in at the end of the day.
Especially with the new local option sales tax before the quarter, there's a lot more flexibility, and now, I mean, at least up in the north, sorry, Jim, Weber, Davis, and Salt Lake and Tooele County, I believe, all have that funding source, which is now available. You can use for active transportation type projects where the previous local option sales taxes weren't. So Davis County, I think, funded half a dozen almost active transportation projects with their first year of fourth quarter. Salt Lake City will start gathering their money. Tooele, I'm not sure what exactly you guys are doing, or up in Weber. So, but there's more there are becoming more opportunities, and we need to keep looking for how do we coordinate those, and how can we do it on a regional scale, multi-jurisdiction.
Jordan, if I can respond to that, the third quarter set that, that we have in the smaller counties, second, third class, actually has the flexibility to use for active transportation since 2014, 2015. We've been using it down in Utah County to do that. Yeah. I don't know if you have the same flexibility up here in Salt Lake County, County First Class, but
Davis and Weber.
Davis and Weber, I think they've done.
So maybe you should create some awareness of funding to facilitate the construction of priority projects.
So do we want to make, we have those two ideas at least. Somebody want to make a motion?
Kim, did you have something?
Oh, I just was going to input that our local health department where I work, we have a tax that we've imposed, and a portion of that goes towards trying to coordinate active transportation as well. I don't know if other areas could look at that, but that's just what we're doing in our area.
Maybe that's an item. I'm trying to look at the goals. And I mean, when we first created this committee, it was a big effort to include not just the transportation groups, but expand to other fields, health related, and that's why Brett sits on the committee. But I don't know if we spell it out in the goals, and maybe we could look at adding something with the health related piece.
Possibly. I would maybe consider too on number four, just because I feel like it isn't, it might be too granular, but something related to data. Because I feel like that's one of the areas where we really fall down across the board with active transportation is we don't know what's happening. I feel like this group could be really instrumental in creating more data that makes a case for active transportation.
So would you recommend getting granular, amending goal number four, field support for active transportation through effective engagement, outreach, and data collection?
That's something along those lines, potentially.
Okay, I'm going to entertain. You're going to make a motion.
Sure, I'd love to make a motion for what you just said.
So adding data collection to goal four.
I'd like to add, make our communities bike friendly is an overarching goal. And that's what we're trying to do, but we're not saying that.
And that might, we could put a sub, maybe something sub underneath number two. I mean, hopefully the output of developing these local active transportation plans is achieving that bike-friendly goal, or at least the first step.
I don't think it always is.
Okay.
Yeah, to some extent, I mean, it's a different way to say it, but that is building support for active transportation. That's one way to do it, I guess. It's a method, but I don't have a problem with amending that. So let's stick with the data thing first. Do we have a second on that motion?
Second.
We have a second. Okay. Further discussion? Do you need to know who made the motion? So, okay.
Can I make one suggestion? Would it be acceptable if staff tries to maybe wordsmith the the things that have been discussed here today without changing substance?
That's fine with me. I just wanted to get some, you know, resolution to this so that we have that incorporated in our goals. If you think that it'd be better to come back to us in January with amended goals and then vote on that.
I'll give you just one thought on that, is that love the idea of adding data. I think it's a really important thing to do. It's a little, in my view, apples and oranges with public engagement. They're sort of two very different things. And so I wonder about how it might fit and how it might read. How does it read? But I don't want to get into wordsmithing here. But if that would be acceptable, we could just come back with another draft in January, or either way, whatever the committee wants.
Well, I'm happy to do that because we don't have great wordsmithing here. But I would like to see the things that we talked about. Those three. Let me just ask the committee, is there anybody that has any problem with those? I think there are three or four things we talked about.
So if I can just restate, yeah. It was the component about sort of shared mobility, e-scooters, and new mobile technologies coming out.
Some uniformity with respect to regulation.
Yep, uniformity with respect to regulation. Mentioned on the phone is creating more awareness of funding sources and abilities to coordinate on projects. So sort of playing off of number three, but a little bit more in there. Health-related component is what Jory mentioned, and then the data component somewhere.
So I was just going to make one. I mean, shared mobility is kind of the issue of the day that we're dealing with, but there's other sort of transportation technologies that are coming. So we may want to broaden that. I don't know if that opens the can of worms, but sharing autonomous vehicles have the potential to either be a huge opportunity for extra transportation or a major barrier. So it might not be too early to start thinking about those issues.
Back over here.
I just think that possibly with trying to tie in, maybe we have a mission on the top. Communities active, so bike being included in that, but through data, through coordination, and then the goals to reach those objectives underneath it. So collect data in all of those areas. I don't know, that I'm just suggesting that that's the mission and then the goals to reach that mission statement. Just suggestion.
Does this committee have an identified mission?
I was just going to pull it up on our... I think we developed one when we first started the committee. And then we've kept it and then just tweaked the goals on what we wanted to focus on in the upcoming year on a yearly basis. I mean, because this will really drive our focus for agenda requests. You know, how can we utilize this committee to provide input and direction and guidance to both long range planning, RGC, to the Transcom, and then how can we do collaboration and coordination internally? So, but I'm fairly certain we have an ATC kind of mission, goal, direction.
Yeah, and to some extent, the mission is defined kind of by the resolution of the council that created the committee too. I mean, I think it maybe fit better as a part of a goal rather than a mission, just because our mission has been established by the resolution creating us. But it can't be too insubordinate, I suppose. Okay, so have you got some idea of what to come back and then we'll consider this more in January or whenever we meet again?
Unless there are other comments based on what was repeated on the four options and then bicycle-friendly communities, you know, we can certainly take that as staff and come back at our next meeting.
Did we get what you had mentioned to you?
Well, I kind of, I think we need to look at making sure people are aware of funding opportunities because we don't have an active role, per se, in funding.
Yeah, we're not actually.
You're broker, information broker about funding.
So I just ask, does anybody have an objection to proceeding with staff revising this and bring it back to the committee next year? Seeing none, then I think you have your direction.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Then moving on, we need an update on the Tiger grants from Jay Price.
From up here, or from down there?
Whatever you want.
Or probably want.
There should be a presentation for this one in one of the PowerPoints. I have the Tiger.
There we go. That looks like the one. This is actually a modified presentation from one that I gave at the Utah Summit that Heidi put on, which was a terrific, terrific summit. This is, if you'll cast your mind back to 2013, back in the ancient times of 2013. I don't know those of you who remember the UCATS study, the Utah Active Transportation, or Utah Collaborative Active Transportation Study. But one of the things that came out of that UCATS study was that we need to focus on integrating, better integrating active transportation and transit. And we looked at all of our fixed transit locations, especially the Front Runner. In Utah County, the Front Runner stations, and said, and looked at all of the connections or the lack of connections to those stations, and said what we need to do to improve connections into these so that that nexus between active transportation and transit works a lot better. One of the things that came out of that study as well was the impetus to go after this Tiger grant. Big $28 million, I keep saying the $28 million because that's what we asked for. Big $20 million, which is what we got, was still surprised me now. But what that means to us down in Utah County and down in the MAG is that it helps us to make some connections that we could not otherwise make. This is, just to illustrate that, this is the Murdoch Canal Trail. Runs from the Jordan River Trail 20 miles down to the Provo River Trail, which is over here, and it's part of that Gold Spoke network that we celebrated this summer. You'll see we have done surveys. Go to the next one. Am I doing this? I'm doing this. We've done some intercept surveys on the Murdoch Canal Trail that tells us that people access the trail live very close by. Probably 85% of people live within a mile of the trail. A large majority live within a half mile of trail. And so what we did is we took the trail, we buffered it a half mile and buffered it at 1 mile to show the access to this as an active transportation facility. Of course, it's used for more than active transportation, but that's what we're focused on here. And then we come up here to the Great Wall of SR 92. This is the giant State Route 92 that there is no good way to cross over. And so we have developments up in here that when that build out will be about 30,000 residents. Right now, I think they're in the 20,000 range, something like that. Big community that doesn't even have any access down to this because we don't have a good crossing. And then we look at the Lehigh Front Runner Station, and we've cut off access to them because of SR-92. Right. And so how do we create that access that's close by, that's comfortable, that is not intimidating? This is the current access. It's 9 lanes, including the turn lanes. We have 3 turn lanes and 6 travel lanes coming through here. I took this picture 3 weeks ago. It's just no fun to try to get across here. It's a physical as well as a psychological barrier to using active transportation. So how do we fix that? Well, we do some makes sense. We bridge that. Of course, this is a 280, almost 300 foot wide corridor that we have to bridge. It's very expensive. How do we do that? Well, that's where the Tiger grant came in. That's one of our two big projects we're doing down in Utah County. Is this bridge right here that is 14 feet wide, it's actually 16 feet wide, about $5.2 million. And we wanted to do this as a region-wide project, not as a city project. Lehigh City couldn't do this all by themselves. MAG couldn't do this all by themselves. UDOT couldn't do this all by themselves. And so we did this regionally. And this is what we come up with. We come up with about $3 million in Tiger, about $1.2 million in UDOT, just under $1 million in MAG, and then Lehigh City, who is not putting any cash into this at this point, will operate on it in the future. So this little connection all of a sudden brings these 20 to 30,000 residents within range of biking or walking to the Lehigh Front Runner Station, where they didn't have that before, and also to that Murdoch Canal Trail. So, and I already went over this connection, just kind of skipped that. So the next piece, I want to kind of keep it short because Sean has some, I think, more interesting things to talk about up next. But so the next thing is we look at this Lehigh Front Runner Station and we say, okay, now that we've provided access for this developing community, there's a rapidly developing community off to the west. And they're even closer by, they're within walking distance. They should be able to get there very easily. Problem we have is that, and sorry, this is kind of hard to see on here. Here's the station. This is the Jordan River. Jordan River Trail is on the east side of the river. There are no bridges across the Jordan River. Bridging the Jordan River is not a problem. That would be a fairly easy solution. The big problem we have is getting through actually a golf course. This is a private golf course, so we have to get through Thanksgiving Point. We think it's doable, but that's going to be one of the issues that we have trying to make that connection. So this is the half mile radius over into this new neighborhood. This is where, if we can get a bridge somewhere along in here, is easily walkable and therefore easily bikeable for the most part. The pink, the red you can hardly see, is the 2 mile radius, which is what we make an assumption for biking easily to transit. If I lived here and wanted to get over to here to use the Lehigh Front Runner Station, my current choice is this route, which is 3.5 miles, whole different ball of wax. And that is a gigantic barrier to the integration of active transportation and transit. So if we can just bridge this, kind of like we're doing up here, we've got the great wall of the river to cross and the golf course. And the same thing happens when we can do that. We can go from a barrier of 3.5 miles to a half mile. Completely different situation. Okay, any questions on that?
Quick comment, Jim. So all of those connections, I don't think you really articulated this, but it's really critical, are grade separated. So someone going from that community of 20,000 people now could get to Front Runner by not going on the road, or I think they would have to cross one crosswalk on a really minor street.
They would, and thanks for bringing that up, because I didn't talk about this, because this is a whole nother presentation.
Yeah.
But the Technology Corridor project that UDOT is doing down in the same area will upgrade our active transportation facilities across and along I-15 tremendously. And so this bridge that we're putting in back here, you can get across I-15, but it's a little bit uncomfortable because you have to do it at grade on the on-ramps and off-ramps. There's three crossings you have to get across there right now. That's going to go away with this corridor project that's underway right now. And so this bridge and this connection becomes all that much more comfortable and feasible because it is grade separated.
It's exciting.
It is exciting. It's very exciting. Okay, thank you.
So you're going to do the next one too? I think you are.
Actually, Sean is going to take care of this one.
Okay.
And this should be one of the Google presentations.
As Jim mentioned, every year yearly we go out and do an intercept study, intercept survey, and we can figure out you know, what age groups, how far people are from the trail, gender and whatnot. So we found from these studies and our own personal experience that some of our at-grade crossings felt rather uncomfortable on the Murdoch. So we're going to delve into that a bit. On the Murdoch Trail, since the crash rates are quite low, very low, on the at-grade crossings that we'll be looking at, there's been one crash in the one reported crash in the total time that it's been open. So that's what, 14 million crossings since it's been open. And we could calculate our crash rate because we had our wonderful eco counters there. So yay eco counters. I look forward to seeing how that bolsters your numbers as well.
Okay.
And when the Murdoch was built, it was meant to be sort of the I-15 of biking in this area. To use it as a real transportation route. So we have 15 to 18% of the people here are commuting. We love that. Just to give you a kind of idea, here it is. Here's what our counters have shown. There are 29 crossings, 10 fabulous underpasses, wide and bright and airy, 19 at-grade crossings on local roads, lower speeds, fewer vehicles. This is one of our, from our intercept studies, we found that in particular 1600 North was a difficult crossing. It's, the trail goes diagonally across two roads that are fairly well used. There is a light, but it's irritating as a trail user to cross one leg and then wait and then cross the other leg. A lot of traffic coming through. We went out and videoed for a few hours. We got a few hundred people going through and mapped out who was going where and what their compliance rates were. It's very amusing to watch people's behaviors. We found, possibly surprisingly, similar compliance rates with both pedestrians and bikers. About 60% overall stopped both times, waited for the light, waited for that PED signal. But more common was you see a gap, you go for it. When people waited, often it was because they had to or they would be run over, including, you know, our wonderful law-abiding citizens, who we truly appreciate. Because we took this video, because we mapped it out, because we could show Orem City what was actually going on here, that people were waiting for gaps, we could inform their solutions about what to do with this intersection. They wanted to put in a scramble crossing, stop both lanes of traffic, let people just go free. And we said that might not work because people are often just looking for gaps. So they're coming up with a new solution. They're thinking of putting a roundabout, merging that with a trail. We had Alta help them with that. So because we listened to people, because we took those surveys, went out, heard that there was this problem, we were able to take the video, get the numbers, pin down the behaviors, and help Orem make a better, or inform their solution. For our mid-block crossings, when I-15 was built, the designers were a little bit nervous about putting in so many mid-block crossings on these roads. And indeed, when we surveyed, many people said, I hate crossing there. I come, I sort of stop. The cars maybe stop. Sometimes they don't stop. The trail users have the stop sign. But I mean, who likes to stop and go when they're riding a bike so many times? Stop and go so many times as they're riding a bike. So again, we went out, we looked at our crash rate. Zero crashes at these at-grade crossings. What we found was interesting. So the trail users have the stop sign. I don't know if you can really
see up here, but you're looking from the trail user's point of view. There's a stop sign. The vehicles see this sign, not flashing or anything. At the better crossings, there's a bit of a bulb out to give the trail users a bit more visibility. But more often than not, vehicles were stopping for trail users. Because everyone knows that there's a trail crossing, they're kind of looking out for each other and aware that there's some danger present, there's some discomfort in these crossings. Do the stop signs work? Not entirely. About 19% of our trail users actually stopped there. So what we would love is to have a yield sign for the vehicles to give everyone a little more leeway, to have a kind of gooey space there where people can communicate about their crossing rather than thinking, I have the right of way, or they have to stop, or, you know, being stuck in your road. And this is something that also came up at the Walk Bike Places Conference in New Orleans. It was nice to see that a similar study sort of had been done by Moby somewhere in Norway, I believe. They had another space where bikes and people were interacting quite frequently along this lovely shopping corridor. The pedestrians were saying, I'm afraid the bikers are gonna mow me over. And the bikers were saying, this is our route. This is how the kids bike to school. And so the city council called in the group Moby to take a look at it. They originally said, the council said, we want to kick the bikes out. But Moby took a close look and said, there are zero reported crashes with injuries here, so it's not really a problem. And they found that in this space where you had so much interaction, there's a bit of discomfort, but that discomfort actually creates a more safe environment because people are watching out for one another. And so their recommendation in Moby's situation was to remove all the commercial A-frames that people could go to give pedestrians a little more space, and not to separate the uses entirely, but rather to bring everyone together. So that's what we have here. Discomfort sometimes generates safety in the right conditions, lower speeds, people making eye contact with one another. Questions?
Is discomfort the same thing as courtesy, maybe?
Yes.
I think it can generate courtesy. Yeah. The discomfort that we're talking about is a little bit of friction, but we don't, and changing expectations, because people, when you get on the freeway, you have a certain expectation of what you can do. You get in your lane and you can fly. On local streets, people kind of have an expectation that they can get in their lane and semi-fly. If there's no traffic control in a location, then those expectations are maybe a little different. But where they're, like at all these mid-block crossings, like what Shauna is saying, what we're saying is that people are negotiating with each other to get across. There's no expectation that you're going to stop definitely and I'm going to go definitely. Maybe there should be. And that's what all of our engineering people, as they looked at that, traffic engineers, said there should be a definitive stop control, or that there should be a traffic control for one leg of traffic, and that should be for the trail. What we're seeing is that in real life, even though we have that so-called stop control, is that it's still a negotiated crossing. And if we were to go to just a yield, essentially that's what you come up with, is you come up with, we've allowed everybody to say we're going to negotiate this crossing. And it seems to be very successful. We've had the accidents. We've actually had, I think, 4 accidents on the Murdoch since it opened.
At controlled crossings.
Yeah, three of them were at controlled crossings. One of them was at a non-controlled crossing, but it was a really weird situation. And we've had... We estimate 14 million crossings. So 4 accidents out of 14 million opportunities is not very high, when you look at it. So
I think the message that we use take away from this is don't be afraid of at grade too much, don't be afraid of mid-block too much, and don't be afraid of giving trail users and road users the opportunity to interact a little bit.
Jim, you don't have gates on that Mudon Trail like we have on the Dimmitt Ramp.
We do not. One of the reasons we don't is because I looked at the gates on the Denver Rio Grande and said, we're not going to do that on the Murdoch.
Well, I wish somebody convinced UTA we don't need them on the Denver Rio Grande either. Your experience obviously points that out, that it works without them. Why do we have those obnoxious things on there?
I think it's because of that fear that without the positive control, it's going to be accident prone.
I would bet there are more accidents as a result of those gates than probably in spite of it.
Yeah.
I
was thinking about Phil's earlier comment about data and, you know, drawing upon the lessons of Jim and Shauna with regard to intersections and connections. I wonder if we can together look at the broader region and maybe using speed data and crash data, understand where are those intersections that we should analyze and take a broader look. And then also, that's point one, and then a related point. We've done a lot of first last mile analysis with regard to transit. But to my knowledge, we haven't done a comprehensive first last mile analysis with regard to our highest quality trails, like the Murdoch Trail. But going bigger and looking regionally, and asking the question, you know, whether it's the Legacy Trail or Jordan River or what have you, how can we identify and prioritize those connections that would help improve access to those trails? So related things, but I think what's in common is data and a desire to take a big regional look. So those are just a couple of thoughts inspired by your awesome work.
I'd just like to chime in on the Murdoch Trail and the design element. And not only the width is wonderful, but the placement of the gates. That is one of the things that's really, really nice. When we come up on a gate, we're unclipping 1 foot. We're going through, but we have a space between the gate and the road where there's cross traffic. It's just safer, it's more comfortable. Cyclists enjoy it more. So when you're planning these bike paths, I encourage you not to put the gate right on the road and back it off, as they've done on the Murdoch. It's a wonderful design.
Thank you, Matt. The gate is actually a gate to keep vehicles from getting onto the Murdoch, as it is, as opposed to controlling.
So we're not supposed to drive on the Murdoch.
You're probably not supposed to drive on the Murdoch.
Okay.
Although I do, and I have a key to the gate, so if you want to go for a drive on the Murdoch. The gate is actually a, on the DNRG, there's a, called a Z gate.
Yeah.
Ours is a half Z gate that actually has openings on either side of it to get through on a bike or for pedestrians. So there's no weaving through it. And they are set back from the roadway so that if you need to stack or you need to stop or you need to get going again, you've got room to do that. Which is what we're talking about back here.
So are you responsible for the one accident then, or?
Probably. Probably. No, the one accident was actually a pedestrian was crossing, and the vehicle had stopped, and just as that pedestrian got across, somebody on a bike decided they wanted to cross too, and the vehicle went and they collided.
Thank you, Sean. Okay, Brett, you want to talk to us about your interview?
Thanks, Mayor. So first off, I'm really appreciating all this data discussion because as a public health researcher, it makes my heart get all happy and pound, and which is good because I have a heart rate monitor to track how much. it's kind of a question of why is public health concerned, is interested, is engaged in this, and truly for the last 10 years, we've been focusing on active transportation as our key to promoting physical activity, because we know there's a certain population that's going to go to the gym, there's a certain population that just plain will not move, and there's a big gap in that population in the middle that says, I want to do more, but I either can't afford to go to a gym or can't mentally get into that mindset of workout, where we can say, can we do something that's a little bit more environmentally supportive of what we're trying to do for physical activity. Now, for those of you who haven't had a chance to meet, my name is Brett Makieff. I'm the physical activity coordinator at the State Health Department. We have, let's see, let me count all the people at the State Health Department who are working on the, oh, it's me. So yeah, it's kind of a challenge. Most of the things that we do happen at a local level, and our local health department staff that work on this are amazing. Now, again, they are pulled six ways from Sunday. They're working on a lot of other things, but this is something that they've been very, very good at and have built up quite a bit of capacity over the past 5 years. I mentioned that past 5 years because our funding cycles are on a five-year situation, and when you and I were talking about how do we do this, this is kind of a report out on what we've been doing. That last 5 years just ended last week. So we are lucky enough that we were able to get an additional 5 years of funding from the CDC, Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, to continue to work on this for another five, and we hope that this continues on for very, very long. This is a competitive funding thing, and we dropped from, I think it was 28 states who were funded down to 16, and not all of them were actually in public health. So kind of an interesting situation in that we were funded because of our partnerships and because of you, so thank you. I appreciate that. And we hope this continues forward. We are now funded with a little bit different funding guidelines. That means that we are not so prescriptive in what we can and can't do. We're given a lot more leeway to be able to work with our local health departments and communities to do what needs doing. So in the past, we were very heavily promoting health impact assessments and a lot of real, almost wonky things that were making us feel a little like engineers. And I'll tell you what, we're not engineers, we're learning. This gives us a lot more leeway to be able to do what we need to do. Unfortunately, we are funded less, but that still means we have something we can do. Again, our funding phraseology is that we are to work with partners to connect people to places. And in doing so, that means we're given the ability to work at the neighborhood, the regional, all the way to the state level. One thing that we are trying to do is build on the success of what's been going on with MAG and the intercept surveys, and Jim, it's all your fault. And so we're actually going to be working with local health departments to conduct video intercept surveys across the state to ask those questions of how far, what are those barriers, what are the things that really dig into our connections. And we hope that we get to work with you, because it would make our intercept surveys that much better. And as we do so, we'll collect these, we'll actually create almost a library of experiences that we can then share, whether that's in promotion. And again, we're not holding to ourselves. Share alike, it's wonderful. Happy to do that. But it'll be part of our data collection plan. Now, one of the other things that we're doing is we conduct random digit dial surveys to all phones, mobile, landline, et cetera, to ask questions about health. What are those health behaviors? What are the health barriers? What are some of the outcomes that you're experiencing? If you ever get one of those calls, please answer it. It's wonderful. It's fantastic. It is about 25 to 28 minutes of your time. I'm positive. We're good. But we actually have one of the highest response rates across the country for what we call the behavioral risk factor surveillance system. In those, we've asked a number of questions. Part of those questions have been, in the past 4 weeks, how often have you been using your bike for active transportation to get from point A to point B? Not as a recreation or a workout, but to get from point A to point B, like a shopping center or work. And we've seen those numbers actually increase from about 21%, this is across the state, to about 40%. So I'm really impressed with what's been going on. And I put a lot of that on the environmental changes that have happened and the active transportation plans to make that happen. We have seen some of those areas really, really spike, particularly in the Ogden area has had some of the highest. Some of our rural areas are a little bit more challenging because there are just not the places that people can go. We do have a new question going out this next year. We've just been testing it about if there were more sidewalks in your community, would you use them? And we don't ask them, are you going to use them for active commuting? Are you going to use them for physical activity? Just are you going to use them to be able to say, are we looking for those environmental supports? So that'll be going out this next year. Finally, we've been collecting a lot of those places, the places that people go to in a health resource locator. And we're taking that information and we're hoping to work, again, with partners to develop an app that will be an opportunity for people to say, where am I? Where do I want to go based on that? Is it going to be a farmer's market, maybe a place that accepts SNAP benefits? Are we going to a place that is a trailhead, a rec center, a park, a place that we can build on, maybe even some clinics, and say, where am I, how do I get there, and can we make that be a little bit more efficient? So we're hoping to continue our work to support as much as we can all the hard work that's happening here, especially when it comes to the health decisions that in many cases are extremely local, and hopefully I'll be able to support our local health departments who can then support you in that process. But if you have questions or comments, concerns, cheap shots, small objects you want to throw, it's fair game, please contact me. Let me know what we can do to make your world a little bit easier when it comes to health. We are not the medical field, we are the population health. So those things that support, we are often use the terms, we provide certain services, we promote healthy behaviors, and we protect those populations, especially vulnerable populations, in our, this case, our kids, our older adults, those people who may not have access to vehicles. We're there to help, and if you haven't heard of us, then in many cases that means we're doing a good job. We hope to continue to not be the forefront of everything. We're there to support and help you in your process. So please let me know if there's anything I can do to help. Thanks.
Thanks, Brett. Okay, Heidi, move your time.
Yeah.
It was
I'm
great.
I'm gonna jump up in the agency of things, so.
So you got a tab just above.
The green slide.
Got it.
Wonderful.
This was, I don't know how many people got to go, but this was excellently attended and really informative, cool thing, so.
So again, for the people that don't know me, my name is Heidi Guthard. I'm with the Utah Department of Transportation in the Planning Division, and I run the Move Utah program. So the whole premise behind the Move Utah program is to provide technical assistance and planning kind of support for local communities throughout the state, so not specifically to Wasatch Front. Where we are right now, but to rural communities as well as urban ones. And Brett, with the Department of Health, we administer about $25,000 in cancer control grant funding that we act as a pass-through agency and hand that funding off to local communities so that they have something to start their active transportation planning. Additionally, we're starting other partnerships with arthritis, pain prevention, and kind of just embarking on kind of the health grant world and how we can assist communities in their active transportation planning by leveraging our health partnerships. So to kind of kick off our Move Utah program, it's very new to the department. It's only been around for about 9 months. We thought we would rebrand the old Active Transportation Health Summit, which Wasatch Front and UTA previously would partner on and conduct. And it's kind of fallen off the radar a little bit. It didn't happen last year, so we thought we would adopt it at the DOT, rebrand it to our Move Utah Summit so that it could be focused on active, healthy, and connected communities. So I should have put my introduction slide up there. We picked an event to kind of run in conjunction with. So Women in Transportation was having their regional conference at the Little America, so we just piggybacked because it's a lot of transportation professionals gathering together for that event. It married well. So we did a lot of cross-pollination, so to say. We were able to, in our kind of first year with this program and with the summit, have a lot of strong partners come to the table and help us put on this event through either in-kind donations or financial commitments. So we're really appreciative of all of the diverse contributors to the day. And through our Move Utah program, we have various community designation levels. So we can kind of assist communities that are just kindling their active transportation enthusiasm, their planning process, they don't know where to start. or we have communities that are off to the races. They have a plan, they're building infrastructure, they're just wondering how they can do better community engagement or how they can get their assets together to apply to be bicycle friendly. So we kind of custom cater each community's approach to these community designations. And we thought that this summit would be a great way to highlight kind of those tiers of where communities can fit in the planning process. So we aligned the community, our tracks for the day, our educational tracks, to focus in on these different levels. So we focused on transportation, health, and land use. And we have varying levels of each of those. You could be a beginner health person talking about developing health partnerships in your community, or you could be an advanced person like Brett having a really high level discussion about how do we have metrics with health outcomes in our transportation planning or in our health or in our land use conversations. So this was the agenda for the day. We had a lot of diverse representation from across the state and from across the three different kind of, I guess, areas of expertise: transportation, land use, and health. In the morning, Terry Newell, our second deputy director at UDOT, kicked off the day with a keynote presentation, and we had an all-women's panel that totally knocked it out of the park in the morning that featured UDOT's Elizabeth Waite, who's our communications director. So she talked a lot about the connection to communities and well-being and how transportation, land use, and health kind of are braided together to help communities have a higher state of well-being, and how active transportation is a really fundamental part of that puzzle. Then, you know, we had breakout sessions, and Andrew Gruber kicked off our keynote speaker, who is Tyler Norris. And he was actually here for the last Active Transportation and Health Summit. So he was awesome then. We thought we'd bring him back in, and he gave a really energizing keynote. And we mixed it up at the end. We developed some really unique health maps. Brett McAfee got us some really stellar health data. And so we put that in a Utah map, and we had some Utah context. And so Tyler and I were able to go back on stage and kind of bounce back some ideas about what health means in Utah and what we can do to address our transportation challenges with a health lens or with a land use lens. And then in the afternoon, Mayor Silvestrini was on our mayor's panel, which was like some really engaging conversation from leadership within from communities from throughout the state. So, you know, we talked about issues in Coachella. Missing some slides at the end. We talked about issues in Tooele and Park City, Provo, the new Warren BRT UVU, or UVX?
UVX.
Yeah, UVX, and how it's all of the Fs. It's fast, it's frequent, and it's free. And so we talked about how that's really impactful for active transportation users by providing options.
Sorry, there's four Fs.
There's four Fs.
Fast, frequent, free, and full.
Yeah, it is very full. I think you guys are at max, not at max ridership, but you're having a lot of ridership considering that it's not actually yet been transitioned into a legitimate vehicle.
Yeah, into completely open.
Yeah.
I would add a fifth. It's fun.
Awesome. Oh yeah, there we go. So, you know, we gave a little bit of highlight about, you know, what's going on in Park City with their free electric transit. The e-bike share, and these are just some photos from throughout the day. We had 360 registrants, about 344 actually attend
oh, wow,
the day.
That's good.
So it was an excellent showing. I think there was a lot of energy and momentum. I don't know how many people here attended. Okay. So I feel like at the end of the day, there was a lot of momentum and enthusiasm to, you know, everyone can be their own champion for active transportation within their own community. And they can speak for people that need to walk and bike and be involved in the planning process, which is really critical for, you know, for us to do community engagement in a way that brings out people in the community that kind of need our transportation resources the most. So it was a really good day, lots of engagement, really compelling breakout sessions, really excellent lunch. Andrew Gruber made fun of me because we had fruit cups for dessert.
but help, if you make the healthy choice the easy choice, you create positive habits to last a lifetime. So in summary, we're creating new pages on the Move Utah website that will feature all of the content from the day. I'm meeting later today with Penn and Powers to develop a highlights video with kind of some key messaging from the keynote speakers. And all of those will then be posted on our Move Utah website, and we'll be sending out an email blast with that content. So I'll be sure to circulate it.
So I think Andrew's comments weren't just limited to the fruit cups. I think he wanted to have ribs.
Fair enough.
Right. It was a great word.
Wonderful.
Bert, did you have something to say? Or?
Yeah. Oh, after Heidi.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Bert? Thanks.
Thanks.
So I don't have any slides. In fact, I have notes that I'm going to have to look at. This is a sort of a last minute addition, but something I think that everyone should know is happening. As many of you know, WFRC and transportation stakeholders in our region have been increasingly using access to opportunity as sort of a lens for looking at the transportation system and land uses and how well they work together for mobility. Access to opportunity attempts to measure the connectivity between where we live, where we work, the amenities that we desire, and goods and services that we consume. And we've been able to do this increasingly over the last year or two, starting from the perspective of vehicles and roads and expanding a little bit into transit. And recently the FHWA came out with a guide to measure multimodal connectivity in communities. So that includes vehicles, transit, active transportation. And to their credit, they came up with a funding pool for pilot projects to do this. Invited folks across the country to apply for that. And Jordan Backman at UDOT led a proposal team that applied for this funding to measure multimodal connectivity. And we were successful, which is great. And we've just known about this for about a month or so. But the plan is to build digital map data, GIS data, that makes it so that we can do meaningful quantifications and metrics of how well our communities are connected, using that access to opportunity lens to include active transportation, but also these linkages between active transportation and transit and other ways that we get around. And we'll be able to do this at the regional level. We'll be able to do it along key corridors and at the neighborhood scale with the data resource and the analysis process that we'll build with this grant funding. We'll be able to look at, compare things like shortest paths to quality weighted paths and figure out, come up with ways to prioritize where we're missing linkages in, the most valuable linkages are missing in our AT network. And we'll also be able to do things like calculate travel sheds and come up with measures for the number of employment sites that are within bikeable and walkable distances, or maybe that combination of biking, walking, or scootering to transit and on both ends and trying to figure out, how many jobs can you get to in different parts of the region that way, and what types of amenities can you reach in different parts of the region. So in summary, I think we're going to be adding a lot more rigor to identifying and prioritizing new and upgraded AT facilities in particular, kind of along the lines of what MAG did. We'll be able to run analytics and come up with those types of solutions together instead of just going off of sort of our knowledge base of local conditions. And then Ted mentioned that ability to kind of think of, or that perspective of thinking about our best quality trail system as sort of a front runner type or light rail type corridor. And you know, in addition to connecting the AT system, we can look at an AT to transit system. We can look at connecting neighborhoods that don't have that great accessibility to our premium trail resources. So what we're going to build is a GIS data set and a set of analysis techniques. They will be public domain. They will run on our GIS software with Network Analyst, which a lot of the transportation stakeholders have. And we're expecting to deliver that approximately late summer of next year. And I guess at this point I'll stop talking and ask if any of the stakeholders or partners have any additions to my introduction to the project, Jeff or Heidi maybe. And also, hearing none, invite anyone else who's interested in this sort of data building and analytics building capability to either get in touch with me or Jordan at UDOT.
Or if you want to mention that meeting we talked about yesterday
Sorry, I can't hear you.
I want to talk about that idea we talked about yesterday about getting a group of the planners and the AT folks together with SSPI and
I'll give you first dibs.
No, go ahead.
Okay. So this idea of enhancing our ability to look at accessibility, you know, in particular, this grant is focusing on multimodal and probably active transportation and connectivity. The thought we had yesterday in a meeting at UDOT was to, in the not so distant future, organize an event where we brought everyone who had data or analytic interests together and kind of did a brain share exercise where we presented what we were working on and then we left some time for discussion about synergies and missing links that we could pursue together. One of Jeff's ideas was to bring in an organization that we've worked with before to kind of observe and contribute some of their own state of the practice knowledge and just kind of make a day of it and bring all of these different efforts and interests together to make them more cohesive.
Perfect.
Okay. Great.
Any questions?
Just a comment. Can we cheer you on and say thank you?
You can if you cheer us on in person and participate. That's even better. But yeah, we're going to be able to do, you know, Hugh's first day at Wasatch Front. I think it was your first day. I don't know if you biked or skateboarded to Front Runner, took Front Runner to Salt Lake, took light rail out to the airport, biked in to this office. And one of the first things he said to me was, you know, I've been preparing to commute to my first day at work. You know, I asked Google to solve this problem for me. And it can't do that. It can only look at one mode at a time as it gives you the shortest path and directions to get somewhere. So, you know, like, this will give us that capability to analyze how accessible our region is or our neighborhoods are at that multimodal level. And who knows, maybe someone will pick that up and put it to work, you know, in terms of just like helping citizens do route planning. So I think it's pretty exciting. And again, I would love to have anyone who's interested in this, let me know or let Jordan Backman at UDOT know.
Definitely.
Thank you.
One other quick thing on this is that I met with some local bike committee leaders last night, and they asked me how they could better integrate with the regional plan, the regional efforts. And I said that their local efforts are key to my regional efforts, because when we make the connections to their neighborhoods, if they're very interested in making bike friendly to transit and to the, like you said, a higher quality system, then we've really accomplished something. And we've really accomplished something together. So the tool that you're talking about, if I'm reading this correctly, will allow us first to make those connections, to build the infrastructure, and then perhaps allow the residents to to make that connection in their mind.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of the power of maps and geographic analysis, right? Is we can ask these data sets to show us things that we might not be able to discover on our own necessarily, unless we were local experts. But then we can also communicate them to stakeholders, to citizens, and promote them. So that ability to sort of discover and manage and communicate, that's what I'm hoping that we, you know, that's actually the higher level calling for putting together this sort of technical resource.
Thank you. So Phil or Jory, you want to talk about New Orleans? Anybody else want to talk about New Orleans?
It's really humid if you've never been.
Yeah, there was a, others can, so there eight people from Utah ended up going to the Walk Bike Place conference in New Orleans. Donna was there, Rebecca, Phil, myself, Heidi, along with Travis with UDOT, Tom Millar with Salt Lake City, and one. Dayton Kreitz from Cache Valley, or Cache County Trails. Anyways, I think some of the biggest things that I got that was riddled throughout the conference was taking into consideration equity. So making sure we're putting bike routes to serve all users throughout the region. Seemed to be riddled throughout the conference was the big thing. They had also done some just overnight, like I think the day before or within the last couple of days, they put up a protected bike lanes with some temporary barriers, and they seem to be heavily used. The nice thing was is a couple of the temporary pieces got hit by a vehicle coming in and out of a hotel or something like that. And that's the nice thing about doing the temporary before you do a permanent is you can check to see did you leave enough turning radius for vehicles to get in and out of the parking. But overall, I think the city hosted a great event. Good walking tours, but right, Phil, it's 9 o'clock in the morning. I swear it was 90 degrees with 95% humidity, so it was interesting.
Yeah, I would say that the equity thing, I think I went to 3 or 4 sessions that all had equity weaved into it. You know, how are we creating infrastructure and programs for people who don't show up to meetings, people who are working from a different community perspective than we are, many of us who are in this room. The other part of it too was all ages and abilities, facilities, protected bike lanes, where that was really consistent. Like, how can we start building for the people who aren't biking yet, but who want to bike, as opposed to just continuing down the path of striped bike lanes that are for the people who are already riding. So those were probably my two big takeaways.
In keeping with that, there was a couple sessions that spent a fair amount of time letting people know the details of the anticipated new Astro Bikeway design guide, which is coming out hopefully coming out in 2019, which is very much in the all ages and abilities perspective. So very much shifting from just painting a bike lane on a street, regardless of the speed and volume of the traffic that's next to you, to much more incorporating separated facilities on the higher speed, higher volume roads. So that was one of the things that was very notable about that. I was also really interested in some of the wide streets that we saw there and how they used signal timing and median islands to make it so that you could safely cross seven lanes of traffic without feeling like you were exposed the entire time. So you'd be able to go halfway and have a median. And so people who were fast walkers could go the whole way across. But I saw some people with canes or wheelchairs crossing, and they were able to go halfway, have a place where they could wait, and then go the other halfway. And the way they had the timing of the signal set up was like, you didn't have to wait 5 minutes for the first half crossing and 5 minutes for the second half crossing. You could do them fairly closely together. So just some creative, the flip side of that was restricting some turn movements for motor vehicles. in order to make that work. I was also really interested that they have the southern style is that you have your building awning extending out over the sidewalk. You can imagine like the pouring rain in the south, right? But I thought it was very interesting the mixing of private and public space. You know, like you have a privately owned awning that goes over top of the publicly owned sidewalk. And somehow that works, even with less legal concerns.
Thanks, Peggy.
I can speak maybe quickly. I actually went to the Open Street Summit, which was a Saturday and Sunday prior to Walk Bike Places, and then I stayed for the Federal Highways Bicycle Coordinators meeting for the day after the summit. So I was like literally exhausted from walking and biking around and attending sessions. But there were some really interesting pop-ups. There were two Open Streets events in New Orleans that I attended. There. So it was really interesting to see some of the local flavor that those took into consideration. It wasn't a bunch of people planning an event and imposing it upon the neighborhood. It was very grassroots, having those people have activities that were relevant to the kids in that community, to the context of the schools that are there, the elderly population that's kind of aging in place. And then also, kind of gentrification in New Orleans is like a huge problem in equity. And so there were some really compelling conversations with locals. And one of the keynote speakers, who was in a panel during one of the plenary sessions, was talking about how her name is Susie, and she's a woman of color. And she said that gentrification is such a huge issue because people are able to buy homes and then Airbnb them. So they're actually pushing residents out of the city. And she was saying that she's not necessarily being priced out because has a job, but she's a single mother, and she's moved from her neighborhood because of safety concerns. And she walks her child to and from school every day, and she said that there's going to be a day where her son is going to have to walk to and from school alone, and she's already had the cops called on her 3 or 4 times because she doesn't look like the other residents that have gentrified the neighborhood. So they're experiencing some really blatant racial issues and segregation issues and gentrification issues that probably seem very stark compared to what we're experiencing here. But that doesn't mean that it's not happening here and there's not a different context for what that looks like, what that feels like in Salt Lake County and across the state. So it was very, some very like tough, interesting, and kind of really granular and gritty conversations that were some good takeaways.
Okay, thanks. Yeah. Anybody else?
I just want to say, if you have not signed the roll, please make sure you sign it. And then also, we had a couple people come on the line. Is there anybody on that still is there that did not introduce himself, just so we can make sure that we have you down for the meeting?
Yeah, and then I should also note that we had a couple of Bill Redley, Kevin Jepson, Daryl Valentine, Bill Redley. So welcome, guys. Sorry you didn't get to introduce yourself, but you can do that in February when we meet again.
Let's do.
Anything else? Entertain a motion to adjourn.
One thing, maybe. Looking to change the schedule next year. So last couple years, we've had 6 meetings. And I think the first year of this ACC, we had 8 meetings. We're trying to figure the right balance of meetings that line up with either our programs or when we can provide input. So we've discussed with the chair and vice chair of having the first meeting in February. So this next year looks like the calendar would be February, April, right? So we can get out ahead of the bike month in April, June, August, and then October again. So 5 meetings next year. Q will start coordinating agendas and kind of pull together a draft of what items we want to talk about next year, and then reach out to members. And if you have items that you want to present, reach out to Q on that.
Are you moving the gateway?
We will move. The schedule now has been bumped a little bit just due to everything, permits, demolition, furniture, so it's looking like March now. So our first meeting will probably still be here, but then following meetings in the spring at our new gateway office that hopefully everybody can ride through. So,
okay.
Mixed feeling, but I was sold on this job being there by the end of the year, so.
Ted was sold the job.
Yeah. All right, motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Jim's good.
Okay, Jim. All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you.